Yeah, thank you, and good morning, everyone, to the results presentation 18-19, and thank you for joining this early morning call. Before we start, have a brief look to the disclaimer, please. And then let's get started. So, 18-19 definitely was a significant year for Metro. Not only we have seen good momentum in like-for-like, but it's also visible that through two major initiatives that we conducted in 18-19, which will be completed in calendar year 2020, we are recalibrating on the right assets, and that in combination with the momentum in like-for-like gives us confidence that we absolutely have the right ingredients for future growth. Furthermore, the two transactions certainly are also going to help us to strengthen our financial means, and I will come to that later on in more detail. But upfront, let me be clear that we see the proceeds that will come into the balance sheet of Metro in 2020 as a good precondition to unlock further value and therefore invest into the business to grow stronger and faster, to drive growth and operating leverage, also to continue our path on M&A, but also certainly to take out cost. And then last but not least, those transactions will also be the base to provide a dividend in 19-20. Now, the year 18-19 was a year about intensification. This is what we announced last year when we headed into the year, and I'm quite confident that we can show you numbers today that are convincing that indeed 18-19 has been an intensive year with lots of progress in quite a number of areas. So if we look into the growth of the two target groups, you can see that the momentum here has been steadily growing, and as you see in the numbers on the left, our HoReCa growth in the target group has been coming up to 4.5%. The one in Trader, for those countries where we are focusing on independent traders, actually totaled into 5.1%. Furthermore, the like-for-like growth is healthy now, essentially in all channels. We had seen good growth in delivery for quite a bit of time, and once again, we were able to continue that growth. You have been aware that on our store base, however, we have been seeing some productivity decrease in years before, and 18-19 marked the year where we could turn this into positive territory. So also on store base, like-for-like growth has come back. And then last but not least, and I will elaborate on this in more detail later on, our franchise approach is giving us quite some promising path for further expansion in the coming years. All these things have also led to an observation that while we see that the core is strengthening and that we see that the potential to capture some more of the headroom in the markets where we are in, there is surplus of opportunity if we put ourselves into the position of our customers and ask what else can we do to provide more for their success. As we always say, their success is our business, and this is Wholesale 360, which I will explain later on in the strategic section of this presentation. It is our new way to think about expansion, and expansion not in the number of stores, not in the number of countries, but expansion in the number of value-add propositions that we can provide to customers. To do all of this, the precondition is our customer relationship, and we have a very strong penetration in the markets where we are in. We see 125,000 HoReCa visits per day. We have 65,000 trader visits per day. We are seeing 50,000 contacts with customers with our sales force on a daily basis. I think that gives a good illustration how strongly we are tied with our customers. Furthermore, the markets that we are serving, and you see that on the left of that chart, are very sizable. So the potential that we can address is pretty big. And while in many of the markets we are in, we are lucky to say that we are in a good position, sometimes actually the number one, two, or three, but our market share is still one where we would say the headroom for growth is significant, and that also has to do with the fact that those markets still are very fragmented. Not to forget that in some of those markets, the top five of a given target group total up to 40% of market share only. So there is surplus of M&A opportunity. All of this only makes sense if we take an approach which is sustainable, and you see that on the right of the chart. It is our clear commitment to make a contribution on sustainability. But as much as this is a commitment, actually it's a business. And let's have a look into that on the next chart. We have been analyzing this now for quite a bit of time, and you've seen us progressing on the classic things in sustainability, which is like reducing water consumption throughout the supply chain, optimizing energy efficiency. But there are areas where we believe they are not only going to create a more sustainable environment, but actually they are business opportunities. And you see three areas that we are prioritizing right now. One is food waste. Food waste in our own supply chain, of course, is an obligation, and to reduce shrinkage is a function of a good demand planning and a good operation in our stores and in delivery. Furthermore, it is, of course, something that has to do with the efficiency in the upstream supply chain, and we collaborate with various partners on the supply base to make sure that the product lost in the upstream chain is reduced to the minimum. The business opportunity on top of that is to help our customers, restaurateurs, to make sure that they are wasting less product. How do we do that? Well, number one, through advisory and helping them to formulate menus that will be more adequate for the service of the customer, for the excitement of the customer, at the same time avoiding as much waste as possible. But it's an illusion to believe that you can avoid that to zero, because there are always leftovers. And leftovers are an ideal opportunity if we team up with companies like Too Good To Go. Too Good To Go is a company that makes other customers aware of surplus product in a hospitality establishment and then promotes it through an app. We have seen a significant positive reaction in the market from our customers and their customers, and we're very glad that we will roll out this collaboration into as many countries as possible. Second is conscious proteins. We are all aware that this is it's a mega trend of our times, and we are fully committed to support that by identifying new product that is formulated with alternative, most often plant-based proteins. And not only we have been the ones first introducing Beyond Burger in various countries where we operate, but we have an entity called Annex Foods, which you might actually even have a look on the web. We're permanently screening the market to find out new products that could be an adequate solution either in hospitality or in independent trade. And then last but not least, it's our obligation to look for organic and responsible products. And as such, we have rolled out sourcing policies across most of our entities, actually for fish and meat, for fruit and veg, for all our entities. And therefore, we are also committed to collaborate with those partners in the supply base that take care about the environment, but also take care about adequate environment for the workforce. On the right, you see the recognitions we have gotten from various institutes. Yes, we are glad that once again we have been identified as the industry leader in Europe by the Dow Jones Sustainability Index. But let me be very clear, while this is a good recognition, it is kind of, you know, the next invitation to do even more in the coming years. Doing more in the coming years is also what we want to when we look into our financial metrics. And when you compare the numbers that we have released yesterday evening, you will find out that in various ranges, we have been meeting the guidance or actually touching the upper end of the guidance. This is true for growth, and our like-for-like growth has seen its best level since 10 years. This is, I think, an achievement which is promising when we also head into the transformation in the coming years. EBITDA has just landed in the middle of the range, you might say. Well, that's true. If you would exclude the extraordinary cost that we had for the VTO situation, actually we end up at the upper end at -2.6 of the range. Now let's look into the composition of that sales development. And here you see what I was referencing before. On the left, you see the growing momentum. We have now quite a number of consecutive like-for-like growth. However, it's visible that it is in the last 2 years where the dynamics are changing from roughly 1%, now above 1%, and now above 2%. And this is encouraging because we see that as the clear confirmation that focus matters. focus matters, and focusing on wholesale is one, focusing on HoReCa and trader is the next, but focusing on specific core target groups within the HoReCa section and trader section is what makes the difference, and that's why we have been able to grow the momentum in HoReCa and very much more actually in trader, which is a domain that we really rediscovered a few years ago as a strategic target direction. You also see on this chart our delivery sales and the momentum we have in food. Delivery, meanwhile, has come up to 20% in the out-portfolio composition of Metro. If you exclude China, it's still at 18%, and there is more room for growth in the coming years. Now, if you look into the set of all targets that we have declared in the guidance and the soft guidance, then it becomes, I think, also visible that, yes, it was a strong year. Christian will elaborate on that in way more detail in a second, but it's clear that not only we could meet the metrics of sales and EBITDA, we could actually overperform on real estate gains, which is a quite strong contributor to the bottom line EBITDA. As a consequence, EPS also improved quite nicely, and I would ask you to pay attention on the cash flow section that Christian will explain in a couple of slides to come. This is the basis why we are proposing a dividend continuity and therefore 70 cents per share. And this is our intention, as I mentioned earlier, also for coming years. To do this in coming years, we need to set the base. And the base for that, among many other things that we are doing with the proceeds, is the transaction in China as much as the transaction at Real. Let me start with the transaction in China. Everything is moving according to the plan. I will not go into the detail of the financial metrics. We explained that a couple of weeks ago, but it's worth to remind everyone that we concluded this transaction at an enterprise value of 12 times, above 12 times EV/EBITDA. I think that is the basis for our conviction. This will significantly strengthen our balance sheet, and we expect closing by Q2 in calendar year 2020. The transaction around Real is now gaining momentum. We had, it's fair to say, a slowdown in the process during summer, also in light of VTO. Things probably did not progress as initially planned. However, in the recent weeks and months, the concept that we are heading for, which is a continuation of a core of Real, while handing over a significant number of locations to other retailers in Germany, and this in full respect of the antitrust regulation, which is one that needs to be respected and acknowledged to make sure this transaction will see the finishing line, and we are now in a situation to say this is absolutely possible in the concept of handing over stores like this has been worked out over the last couple of months. And then thirdly, there is a number of stores that will be closed. This was always foreseen in a going concern approach at Real as much as in this transaction. Now, we changed partner, as you've seen last week. Why did we do that? Well, we had already an offer in spring of 2019 from Ixon Bricks, which we could not work on for two reasons. One, it was not attractive enough commercially, and second, it was creating antitrust complication. A month ago, we reinitiated discussion with Ixon Bricks on both topics and other topics. Ixon Bricks submitted a significantly better proposal, and that's why we changed partner in this negotiation. And we changed partner for good, as we think, because this transaction foresees now 100% sale of Real. And this is then, together with China, two big steps forward to simplify the portfolio. In the wholesale context, we will see a much more clearer composition of sales with 70% HoReCa and trader sales. We see that the momentum itself is growing, as I mentioned before, and with proceeds north of 1.5 billion euros, we will be able to strengthen the company further. So in a nutshell, the year 2018-19 has been very intense, that's fair to say, but it has also been very promising in regard of the progress made across many domains. We have seen as well that we can combine that with a sustainable approach, and this is not a contradiction. It's a wonderful combination of strategic relevance to the target audience and a sustainable way of operating business. Financial targets have been met, as mentioned, and portfolio is becoming clearer, more focused, and stronger like ever before. And with that, I would like to hand over to Christian, who will give you much more insights into the financials.
Yes, thank you, Olaf, and good morning, everyone. Moving on to the financial performance, I would first of all like to mention that this section entirely shows continuing operations, including China, or the guidance view for easier comparability. Let me start with the Q4 development, where the positive sales trend after 9 months has largely been carried over into this very quarter. All regions, with the exception of Russia, have contributed to the like-for-like growth in the quarter. When it comes to reported growth, almost all regions came in positive, while Asia and Eastern Europe were the biggest contributors in absolute terms. EBITDA, excluding real estate, has slightly decreased, driven to a large extent by the cost for the VTO. Q4 was largely in line with 9M when it comes to margin and below PY, driven by a decline in Russia, as well as continuous investments into digital and IT. In the last quarter, we have also benefited from sale and leaseback transactions in Eastern Europe, a project development in Germany, and two transactions in China. For the full year, the picture looks very similar. All regions except Russia have contributed to the like-for-like growth for the year, and the sales performance from an assortment perspective has largely been driven by food sales, which have been at 3.1%. The reported growth was impacted negatively by FX effects in Turkey and Russia. Total sales in local currency, on the other hand, grew by 2.5%, with the biggest contributions coming from Turkey, China, and Romania. Delivery sales continue to grow and currently represent an 18% share. In absolute terms, delivery sales grew by 380 million, which for comparability is roughly representing 12 new stores in terms of sales. EBITDA, excluding real estate gains, came in slightly lower than last year and as previously guided. Adjusted for negative currency effects of minus 17 million euros, EBITDA declined by 4.2%. For the full year, we have further realized 388 million euros of real estate gains that contributed to a total EBITDA of roughly 1.6 billion euros for the group. Before moving further down to the EPS, let me share a bit more detail on the regional performance for the year. Overall, certainly the positive development comes from various regions, and starting with Germany, which had 0.3% like-for-like growth, that was also supported by a good delivery performance. The EBITDA, on the other side, improved by 4 million euros in Germany. Western Europe grew at 1.3% on a like-for-like basis, with a good margin development for the full year in Western Europe, while Q4 was slightly impacted by a one-off non-operational effect in a few places in the prior year. EBITDA in Western Europe did grow by 8 million euros, and that was also positively affected, especially by ProAPro. For Russia, the like-for-like continues to be impacted by a reduction of bulk tobacco sales, but adjusted for the roughly 10 million euros one-time gain from Seconomy in PY, the EBITDA came down by 30 million euros, driven also by continuous price investments. For Eastern Europe, the strong 6.3% like-for-like growth was driven by the majority of countries, and especially Turkey, Romania, and the Ukraine did contribute to that. EBITDA decreased by roughly 11 million euros at constant currencies, driven by expenses linked to the depot in the Czech Republic. In Asia, the like-for-like growth was positive across all countries. EBITDA increased by 14 million euros at constant currency, also driven by China. So much for the regional operational performance. Let's now move to the contribution from real estate that has been exceptionally strong last year. This was driven by an exceptional performance of our teams, a spillover of a transaction from last year, and two preponed transactions from next year. A very high proportion of real estate gains in 2018-19 came from project development-related transactions. These include a project development in Bangalore, resulting in close to 40 million EBITDA gain, a project development in Germany that is recorded in the segment Others with 17 million EBITDA gain, and also very importantly to mention that obviously with the sale of a majority stake in Metro China to Wume, we crystallized significant value from own real estate in a somewhat preponed manner, and we further preponed two transactions in China that were planned for the next year into 2018-19, and we're quite satisfied with the results that we have achieved there. As a result of all the mentioned topics above, our pipeline for next year has decreased to around 10 million euros, but in the medium term, we do expect to see roughly 100 million euros per year in real estate gains, also after the application of IFRS 16. We certainly have a strong pipeline of projects in Europe as well as in Asia, which the team is already working on. Let's now move back to the group with a view to bridge from EBITDA to EPS. For Q4, D&A came in slightly higher than last year due to increased investments in digitization. We are gradually changing the investment mix from store-based to digital business models. Improvements in net financial results were coming from a reduced interest expense as a result of favorable refinancing terms. In addition to this, we have positive effects in other financial results from FX hedging and due to favorable currency developments. If we look into the full year, D&A also there is slightly higher due to higher investments, IT investments with shorter useful life. Similarly to Q4, net financial results strongly improved due to good refinancing terms. The tax rate has increased from PY, but we need to keep in mind that last year has been positively impacted by one-time benefits like foreign tax law changes and revised risk evaluations. This year, we had significantly higher real estate gains, with many of them coming from countries with lower taxation rates, and that was also supporting the tax rate, while on the other hand, in this year, there has been a negative effect from a write-off of deferred tax assets. This is resulting in a good tax rate within the expected guidance range. Overall, this leads to a very significant EPS increase of 18% to €1.44. On the basis of that strong EPS development, we propose a dividend of €0.70 to the annual shareholder meeting, which corresponds to a payout ratio of approximately 49%. We apply the payout ratio to continuing operations, including China, as this is the perimeter on which guidance was given for 18-19. Looking at the EPS from discontinued operations, the decrease is mainly linked to a 401 million impairment for Real, which was based on the status of negotiation of the Real disposal. The €1.44 from continuing operations and the negative €1.79 from discontinued operations then add up to the reported EPS of negative €0.35. Again, adjusting this for the impairment, which is a clear one-off effect, this leads to a reported EPS of €0.76. We move to the free cash flow, which certainly has been one of our key focus points also in the last year. We have further increased that number by €155 million compared to last year. Similarly to the positive effects on the P&L, the cash flow has also benefited from a combination of good operational performance and exceptionally high real estate gains, as the increase was driven by higher EBITDA and lower CapEx and also a strong contribution continuously from net working capital. This net working capital development was very strongly driven by further improved stock days throughout the group, which was and will remain a clear focus point for us. CapEx, including M&A and finance leases, decreased significantly, whereby the shift from store into IT and digitization is very visible. We continue to open leaner and smaller stores, thereby freeing up CapEx for digital activities. Finally, net debt stood at €2.4 billion at the end of September, which is a significant reduction from last year. This was predominantly driven by higher real estate gains, CapEx efficiencies, and the aforementioned net working capital improvements that we did see. This was the summary of financial performance from the guidance perspective. Let me now briefly comment on the reported figures, which certainly in the continuing operations do exclude China on that side. This affects all main financial statements from a group perspective, while from a segment view, Asia, where China previously has been slotted into, the other segment and the consolidation are effective. We have provided a detailed reconciliation of all key financials both in the appendix of the presentation as well as on our IR website. On the right-hand side of this chart, we have put together the key financials excluding China, where sales grew by 2.1% on a like-for-like basis or 2.2% in local currency to roughly 27 billion euros. EBITDA came in at roughly 1 billion euros. Excluding China impacts both the net financial result as well as the tax rate and effect then results in an EPS for the continuing operations excluding China of 1.12 euro. So to summarize this year from a financial perspective, 2018-19 has certainly been a good year in terms of financial performance. Solid sales and profitability trends from 9 months have carried over into Q4. The majority of the regions have shown growth in sales and EBITDA, and this growth is reflected also in the cash generation. This year has been exceptionally strong for the real estate transactions, and although we see next year's real estate contribution to be low, we see roughly 100 million euros in the years from fiscal 2021 onwards. The EPS from a continuing operations, including China, increased by 18% to 1.44 euro, driven by increased EBITDA and better refinancing. Therefore, resulting in a proposed dividend of 70 euro cents, which is in line with our dividend payout range. The reported EPS is impacted by an impairment in discontinuing operations. While the numbers have been presented in the guidance view, including China, Metro China is actually reported as discontinued operation as per 30th of September 2019. Adjusting the financials to exclude China, of course, alters the financial profile of the company, but only to create room for more opportunities in the coming years. For now, let me close the financial performance 18-19, and let me explain how this year's events will shape the next year. As certainly the key topics that you see on this chart will be the main drivers for the next year, also from a financial and structural perspective. First of all, Metro China, that is reported in IFRS 5 and will hence not be part of the guidance, but will certainly generate a one-off cash in. We expect the transaction to close latest in Q2 calendar year 2020 with a roughly 3 euro EPS gain. Real is also in the IFRS 5 disclosure and is also not part of the guidance. Olaf has elaborated on the progress that we're making also on this transaction. We expect more than 1.5 billion euros in net proceeds from these two transactions during the fiscal year 19-20. For real estate gains, we expect to have only 10 million euros due to the preponed transactions from China, but in the midterm, we expect gains at around 100 million euros per year. The efficiency measures, which we have communicated last month, will result in 60 to 80 million in transformation costs for the year and will be separately reflected in the financials to not distort operational view. In the midterm, we expect mid-double-digit million savings to result from these measures. On IFRS 16, we will apply the full retrospective method with adaptation of previous years starting in 19-20. We will share more detail with you in January, but for now, you can expect a 2.6 billion euro net debt increase and a roughly 0.4 billion euro EBITDA increase. Outside of the accounting changes and transactions which will affect next year, the operational performance trends are expected to continue. Sales that have grown in the last year by 2.1%, excluding China, are expected to grow at 1.5 2.5% to 3% range in 1920. EBITDA that came in at 1,021 million, and it is expected to be stable. From a regional perspective, this performance should be driven by a number of effects. For Western Europe and Germany, both sales and EBITDA growth is expected to continue. We will continue to work on our Horeca USP by strengthening our FSD business, building on wholesale 360, and reaping benefits from already strong customer relationships. In Eastern Europe and Asia, excluding China, we will continue to benefit from strong sales growth similar to last year and expect a similar level of profitability. We continue to focus on gaining market share and hence sales growth, while EBITDA is expected on a similar level. In Russia, we focus on repositioning, hence prioritizing sales development, and expect a further trend improvement next year. EBITDA is expected to decrease by 20 to 30 million euros, which will be compensated by Western Europe and Germany. We continue with our repositioning of the business, and volume response is not yet at the level that we aspire to, which is why we will continue to invest into price positioning. That is particularly on the core trader assortment. In the segment others, EBITDA is expected to remain on prior year level. Let me now hand over to Olaf to give you more detail on the strategy that we will follow to achieve this performance.
Yeah, thank you, Christian. And with the guidance that Christian was explaining, I think it's also a good bridge into the composition of sales that we have as of the transaction in China, which gives us quite strong confidence that the base for growth is turning healthier and has more vitality than ever before. Because combining now Horeca and Trader represents 70%. 70% of our sales with those two core strategic groups. You see underneath the composition of sales by region, by segment. And in combination with the momentum that we've seen like for Horeca above 4% and a Trader above 5%, we have the strong conviction that we have a good foundation for the next years to come, which of course also then should turn into profitability growth in the coming years, and I will reference to that in a couple of slides. Let me make a brief statement on SEO. While it's not strategic, it still is 30%. Now, one would come to the conclusion why actually still entertaining that business. Well, number one, it is a quite profitable business. Number two, there are regions where the competitive landscape still is as such that running an SEO business is for good reason. However, you should expect that the number of SEO will come down as a percentage of sales and as total volume of sales in the coming years. But we would not do that with one decision and therefore cut out this target group. As a reference point, we have decided to defocus on SEOs in France at the end of the 90s. And it was only in 2017 that we sold the last TV in our stores, which is a classic SEO category. And this was a healthy process, but a lengthy process, but a profitable process as well. And this is exactly the way we want to address it. So you can expect that our sales will go down on SEO, as they will therefore be overcompensated by Horeca and Trader growth. Now let's look into Horeca. And we have been explaining this a couple of times already, that in every single country we have very clearly defined sub-target groups. So it's not that we are just pursuing Horeca customers with a standard definition. It's extremely localized. And it's also extremely localized in the way we are approaching these people. We have more than 6,000, actually roughly 6,500 people on the street every day in our sales force that entertain the dialogue and the relationship, and therefore also are providing more insights in the way of operations at Metro and the new contributions we can make to their success. We are also their voice. We are taking a lot of action to be their voice when it comes to communication to authorities, to governments, to political parties. But we also want to make sure that essentially everyone has more awareness about the beauty and the power of this community of entrepreneurs. And it's 4 years ago when we started to celebrate one day for them, which is called the Own Business Day. 4 years ago, it was a remarkable start. At the time, we had like 50,000 specials that we were promoting through our platform, and we were therefore bringing new customers to our customers. This year, 2019, we peaked on 650,000 specials that were promoted on our platforms, and we had 300,000 businesses participating. And it's great to see that the industry is taking more and more interest in supporting this initiative. So stay tuned. 2020 is going to be a bigger number once again. We also want to be the leader in relevance when it comes to assortment. That means that for those specific sub-target groups that I refer to, we will always make sure that compared to our peers, we are providing the most relevant product range that is suitable for their business. And that differs, of course, not only country by country, it differs region by region. Actually, it differs city by city. A growing relevance in this will be own brand. We are still at a fairly small share, you might say, at 17%. But let's not forget, it was 2018 when we reactivated the full focus on Metro own brands. And as of then, we see a good tick up in growth at 6% last year. And we are already at 24% in FSD. Significantly more opportunity. We agree, and that's why we will further focus on this in 2020 and the years to come. As much as we very much pay attention to the demand of many of our customers to provide more local products, this is something that we facilitate, as I said, not only country by country, but region by region, and we are up to also allowing stores locally to activate product. This is only possible because of a quite sophisticated and distributed quality control, which you see on the right. Our commitment to product quality is without compromise. We have no tolerance on that one. And the more than 600 people that work in QA on a day-by-day basis here at Metro feel the pride and privilege, but also the obligation to make sure that our customers get the product they deserve at best quality. On top of that, in most of our countries, almost all of our countries, we are providing traceability solutions so that customers can always trace back where does the product come from, how has it been processed, and that gives us a much tighter control on the flow of goods compared to many of our peers. Now let's look into Trader. Our model has changed significantly over the course of the last years, and you have seen that as well in the sales trend that was illustrated a couple of pages before. Our focus is not as it used to be to improve sales with this group only. Of course, we want to do that. But this can only happen if we're focusing on the sell out for those customers. And optimizing the sell out for those customers means that we need to understand better the consumer mission. And that means that sometimes they're there to take product home for their grocery. Sometimes they simply just want to consume at the moment. And that means that the grocery model is changing more and more into a convenience store model, a worldwide phenomena. And who else is better prepared to provide a service level which is unbeatable, like an independent grocer, which most often is driven and run by a family. But they need the commercial support, and that's why we permanently expand our assortment. We permanently think about other product compositions like food to go, coffee corner. We permanently think about merchandise support. So we want to become the solution provider much more than just a store where people replenish for their shelf. The other one is there is no escape from being the leader in price. In that sense, we came to the conclusion we need to be the one that promises and keeps the promise on EDLP, on defined ranges. On the other hand, we need to give more incentive for volume purchase, and that's why the buy more, pay less has become a significant component in those trader-denominated countries like Romania, but also Russia. And on the other hand, we need to give them a very simple tool to optimize their economics, like guaranteeing them a 25% margin on private label products that they sell, that they bought before at Metro. How can we satisfy such thing economically? Well, only if we optimize our operation to the maximum of efficiency. Therefore, we have been reviewing our operations model in stores and have applied way more massification, way more sales through pallets, decreasing the replenishment cost and the service cost significantly. And that's why we also now are very confident not only there is significant growth, but there's profitable growth. A key turbocharger for this is our franchise model. We have learned in 18-19 a significant chunk more on how to run this in a way that is attractive for our customers, but also makes sense for Metro as the provider. And we now have roughly 7,500 franchisees. You have seen a 15% growth, and I don't need to read through the numbers that you see on the right. The number of improvements on visits, but also baskets, is quite remarkable. And now getting closer to $500 million in sales and the growth momentum, it's fair to say this is one of the most attractive growth pillars for the coming years. Now, doing these things with our customers has also led to a broader discussion among the leadership at Metro on how we can support these entrepreneurs even further. And while we had that discussion, we also put ourselves into their shoes in understanding how well are they doing or where are their problems and how are they suffering from things like an increased competitive intensity, increasing lease costs, labor costs becoming more and more expensive. Actually, scarcity of labor is becoming a big problem in the hospitality sector, and so on and so on. And looking at all of these things, we found various areas that we can address to our customers and actually help them to turn their business another level better. And that's what we call Wholesale 360. As you can see on the right of the chart, as of today, we are serving roughly 35% of their needs, which is the goods section. In other words, it means 65% of their needs yet have not been addressed by Metro, and that is about to change. So let's have a look on the way how we think about that. First of all, there is no escape, there is no excuse, there is no other than saying product will remain key. It's the king category in success or failure in our business, and we are totally committed to make sure that our customers get the best range at the best quality in food and non-food. However, it's also fair to say that we need to think more in the domain of solutions when it comes to product ranges. What do I mean with solutions? I mean with products that are way easier to process and therefore enhance productivity of our customers multiple times. This goes in line with consulting. We have learned our fair share about the business of our customers through our digital endeavor. And through that, we found various areas that can be optimized with a sensible analytical approach, and we will invest more into those capabilities within Metro. The digital tools is one we have been referencing on quite a number of times. Digital tools have played a big role and will play a bigger role. In the meantime, we have more than 180,000 digital accounts. Our reservation platform is meanwhile used by almost 28,000 restaurants, so we're expanding with big velocity. Marketplace is a request from our customers to have a single point of contact where they want to get access to as many products as possible. And believe it or not, for the HoReCa industry, there is not a meaningful value proposition right now in the market. So we have been addressing this in 18-19. Services. On services, we feel that there is a number of value-add services that are possible, not necessarily coming from Metro directly, but in collaboration with other service providers. And that's a good bridge to equipment, because that definitely is a big demand for most of our customers in the hospitality sector. Why? Well, they need to optimize productivity, and this is quite often possible with new equipment. Now, let's look how we think about that in a tangible way. And the next chart gives you a sense on how we're approaching that. Let me start with the product. Govenience is a range that we have developed in Germany that goes hand in hand with modern equipment, i.e. a combi steamer. We have now roughly 200 SKUs that are pre-processed by high-quality kitchens. They have been developed by advanced chefs, and these products will boost productivity for those restaurants that will integrate them into their business. So therefore, let's move the circle the other way around and let's look into Pentagast. Pentagast is our partner for equipment here in Germany. It's the leading reseller network for kitchen equipment and advisory as much as service. And we have teamed up, first of all, to give Pentagast access to our customer base and through our sales force promote Pentagast, and the other way around, that Pentagast promotes Metro as much as they are then promoting Govenience. On services, you see an example. This is one from India. In India, there is a mega trend of mobile payment and more mobile financial services that are requested by customers. A conventional Kirana, as you know, more than 90% of trade in India is conducted by these independent Kirana stores, don't have the financial means nor the technical capability to do that. So why not then teaming up with new incumbents in that industry like GoSmart? It's a payment solution that we are promoting that will provide significant value add for our Indian clients. Metro Markets, from idea to concept to implementation, took us 9 months to get it up and running. It started in September. In the meantime, this has already significantly more SKUs than we are carrying in our stores, above 100,000. We are seeing a good uptick now in transactions, and our promise will be this will be the widest range for HoReCa products at a single touch point for customers in the hospitality sector. Digital tools, I would keep that very short because we mentioned it a couple of times, but the one I would highlight here is MenuKit. MenuKit, in a way, has become the opener, the door opener for most all of the insights that we're using to develop further wholesale 360 solutions. And then with consulting, let me probably reference even more on the trader example I mentioned before. None of the things we are doing on the franchise side or trader side goes without consulting. None of the things we are doing on MenuKit, Pentagast, or the like goes without consulting. That means we will transform our sales force in a gradual development from just selling products into selling solutions. That's our vision. That's our conviction, actually. Now, let me summarize what happened to the business model in 18-19. I think it's fair to say that the core shows more momentum. That's clear. Our attractiveness for HoReCa and trader customers is growing, and we have a very good plan for the quarters ahead, for the years ahead, on how we can further expand our presence in those two target groups, while we also are optimizing and improving the Net Promoter Score. Wholesale 360 is just at the beginning. That's clear. But here, the potential of expansion comes back into the equity story of Metro, and not expansion, as I said before, by geography, but expansion by domain of value creation. Let's look into the outlook and the guidance then for the year to come. With the momentum we've seen in sales, we will continue to prioritize growth, and therefore we have come up with a guidance which is in the territory of 1.5 to 3% of total growth in local currency and the same range on the like-for-like growth. Our EBITDA, excluding real estate gains, is targeted to be on the same level as the year before, while we continue to invest into new capabilities and new services like Wholesale 360 and into digital. We want to stabilize now EBITDA and, of course, for the years to come, then continue to improve it. We will conclude the two transactions, which will be significant for our balance sheet, and both transactions will lead to proceeds above $1.5 billion. Our aim with this is to invest into our growth momentum, to accelerate the growth as much as we, of course, also want to improve the EBITDA through that growth. The company as such will be delevered at the moment of time of the proceeds landing at Metro, so therefore also our financial rating will be secured. But we also will bear in mind the interest of our shareholders. That's why I mentioned already at the very beginning, the extraordinary income in 1920 sets the base for dividend continuity also in the coming year, which is what we are striving for. The gap that has now been created through the transaction in China by handing over part of the EBITDA to our new partner leads to the fact that the current EBITDA that we have is much more pure. So it's a wholesale EBITDA, and this EBITDA should grow in the next 3 years to close the gap. How would we do that? Well, first of all, through organic growth in the entities we have and accelerating the momentum, while on top of that capitalizing on Wholesale 360. The second one is one which we will put more emphasis on, and that is M&A. With the proceeds in our bank, with the insights in the markets which we have, and the fact that most of our markets still are very fragmented, we want to repeat success stories like the ProAPro acquisition, which has turned out into a very, very powerful addition in our portfolio. So don't be surprised if you see us now doing more of these things as of 2020. And then last but not least, we want to improve our cost efficiency. So cost savings is at a high priority at Metro and will continue to be, not only here in the headquarter, but in all divisions. But let's not forget the best way how to reduce cost ratio is growth. So not only will focus on savings, but keep the costs where they are, wherever we feel we are already efficient, and therefore push for more growth. Now let's sum up. We have seen a year where the core has become stronger and the portfolio has become purer. We have seen momentum growing in both areas, HoReCa and Trader. We have seen that we have been able to meet the financial targets that have been set at the beginning of 18-19. We will continue on the same path in 19-20. We want to accelerate the growth. We want to turn around now the EBITDA performance and then to ultimately add profits to the bottom line. Therefore, yes, we are absolutely convinced year 19-20 will be a continuation of the transformation, and it will once again be a more intensive year. Now, let me learn at the very end, look into the events and financial calendar for your reference so that you have all that for your notes. And having said all of this, let me now actually then kick off the Q&A session. Thank you for your attention.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And the first question comes from a line of Cedric Lecab of MainFirst. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I have two, actually. The first one is on Russia. Could you please tell us what is still missing in the market for the market to stabilize and to offer the growth prospects that we've been hoping for some time? Do you think that if the market comes back to normal, the current profitability is a good level to consider going forward? That's the first question. And the second question is on the Trader business. Your mix has clearly improved towards HoReCa and Trader. Do you feel as comfortable on Trader as you feel on HoReCa, and what are the best chances to have a sustainable growth story on Trader, not only on top line, but also on profitability? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for those questions. Let me start on Russia with a general observation. I think Also, when you look into the retail sector in Russia, it's fair to say that right now the sector still is in difficult territory that has to do with reduced available income in Russia and still quite negative sentiment of consumers. This hasn't changed much, and therefore also the competitive heat in light of promotion activity in Russia still remains strong. We feel significantly better than a few years ago because we have seen momentum on volume throughout the year. We have seen that our core is becoming stronger, while at the same time we had to give up certain sales. Some of that actually came through legislation, some of that came by choice. So, for example, reselling tobacco in Russia is much more regulated meanwhile, as much as HVS sales are much more regulated. This roughly is a 2% component, actually north of 2% component of the like-for-like decline, which we have seen. Why are we still confident, and how do we think about the midterm, long-term in Russia? We are the leading company in providing product to HoReCa and to independent trader. The sector itself is big enough and vital. Independent trade, roughly 75 billion addressable market. We generate 1 billion of sales, and with a franchise model, it's called Fazol in Russia, we have a value proposition that is very well prepared to create value for them, but also for Metro. On HoReCa, it's a 15 billion market. We are roughly generating 500 million. And we see in both that our strategic transformation is starting to gain momentum. It should be better. We would wish for better if the market circumstances would be better, but the markets are what they are, and therefore we need to be prudent with our approach. That's why also Christian mentioned for the year 2019-20, we expect to further stabilize on sales while we're still ready to see a bit of an EBITDA decline in the coming year. But by then, we should be ready as well to see an improvement on the bottom line. There are a few encouraging signs in the market that would suggest that also policymakers are starting to see the need to address the reduction of disposable income. And this is the VAT reduction on fruit and veg, which was introduced very recently. Essentially, VAT on fruit and veg has almost cut by half. And those things typically indicate that there is a growing attention, that there needs to be done something for consumer sentiment, and that would be, of course, helpful for everybody in the industry. On Trader, your question is well taken, also because in the past we have been very clear that gross margins in trade are significantly smaller than in HoReCa and SCO. The answer for that only can be that our cost of operations needs to be compatible with that. And that's why in all the countries where we are running trader models, we are significantly reducing our cost and also our operating model. When I mentioned this approach on massification and pallets, I'll just give you one reference number. In Romania, 4 years ago, we were selling on pallet roughly, we had roughly 100 pallets per store and selling product. Today, we have more than 650, getting closer to 700. Why does that matter? Well, it matters because it shows you that massification and selling big pack is the way to go with an EDLP and buy more, pay less approach. The cost of service is less than 10% because you're not replenishing single items. You're bringing a loaded pallet to the shop floor, sell it off, and bring the next one. And those are things that we are addressing. So, yes, we are meanwhile now convinced that we can run a good equilibrium between a smaller contribution margin, but then also significantly lower costs, and that makes it profitable.
Thank you enough.
The next question comes from the line of Volker Bosse at Baader Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, gentlemen. Good morning. I have two strategic questions. How do you think about further divestments, as, for example, from countries like Pakistan or India? And the second one would be, how do you think about your store expansion plans for next year? How many stores you expect to be opened on a net basis and in which region? And small follow-up on what would be the tax rate for next year, 1920, on a group basis, your best guess? What would be a CapEx you would guide for in 1920? And how do you think about the net debt level at the end of 1920, taking the proceeds into account? How much do you expect to spend for net debt reduction? Thanks.
Yeah, on divestment, let me make two statements. One is, I think we had a very intense year 18-19 in unlocking two major transactions, and those need to be closed first before we do something else. And
sure,
that's why main priority in 2020 will be in closing those transactions. And then let me make a second statement, which is, with a focus on wholesale and a much purer portfolio already, we are committed to be either number one, two, or three in the domain that we are competing in. That means number one, two, or three in the HoReCa sector, or number one, two, or three in the independent trader sector. If we cannot live up to that, we will have internal review, either on the value creation plan reformulation. If that doesn't show the promise that we can be one, two, or three, we will trigger portfolio discussion. We have done that in the past, by the way, as you have seen us moving on in Denmark, in Greece, in Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
and other places. And you can rest assured we will not stop with this. But as I said, the most important thing is we need to get these two transactions completed. Then on store expansion, We are slowing down the bricks and mortar expansion. We are accelerating the wholesale 360 expansion. That is our way to go. That should be also helpful for CapEx and should make our existing asset base more productive. So we want to make the assets sweat, in other words, instead
mm-hmm.
of enlarging the asset base. And at this moment in time, we have a one-digit number, actually, of NSOs, not worth mentioning right now, in comparison to the old process at Metro.
Then with respect to your three questions on a couple of the other elements below EBITDA and on cash flow and net debt, at this stage, from a tax rate perspective, we don't give a specific number, but I think it's important and fair to assume that next year the tax rate is going to be higher. This is mainly driven by two reasons. One, China will basically be disposed, which has been contributing in the past to a lower tax rate, also because the corporate income tax in China is at a lower level. In the same vein, tax rate should increase by lower real estate gains, basically because also those transactions have been executed mostly in jurisdictions with lower tax rates. With respect to CapEx, also, I think you have seen we have not given a specific number, but we have proven in the past to be very consistent on CapEx efficiency, also in the way that Olaf was describing our thinking on new store openings, and on the other hand, IT and digitalization CapEx. So we will continue to be very prudent and really focus on the things that make a big difference to the customers and obviously then translate into the sales development as well. On the net debt side, you differentiated between two things. This is very important. Obviously, the transaction proceeds from China and also expected from Real. And then on the operational side, I think if you triangulate the couple of indications that we have given there, then on the operational side, there is going to be a few topics that will be hitting the cash flow development, which is also the transformation costs that we have mentioned. On the side of the transactional topics, certainly there will be that expected 1.5 billion inflow, and you can also triangulate that with our expectations around rating positioning. So it is important for us to strengthen the balance sheet and therefore net debt from an all-in perspective in the next year, including the transaction gains, certainly will be significantly reduced.
Significantly. Okay, thank you. One follow-up. How many countries of your portfolio do you see yourself not positioned in the number one or three, one to three position in HoReCa and trader sector? So how many countries could be at this point of time?
Yeah, we would not disclose it, I beg your pardon, but I can say with good conviction it's the minority. It's a small minority of places where that still is the case. And then we would put all effort into play to get into that position. If not, then we come back to the market and I would say we have made a choice.
Okay, thank you very much. Clear. Thank you.
The next question is from Fabienne Caron of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, so good morning. Three questions for me. The first one on the way you report your like-for-like for the different customer groups, now that you're more focused on wholesale, is there a way going forward where we could have the reporting at the group level so that the pie chart you see on slide 25 match with the like-for-like per customer group? I think it would be very useful. Along this line, I've seen in the presentation that you say there's a new definition for the delivery business. If you can explain us what it is and if there's an impact. The second question regarding the real estate transaction you had this year, can you tell us how much of it was sales and leaseback versus property development? And on the sales and leaseback, what was the rental, what was the yield or the rental charge? And finally, regarding your CapEx, you say you focus on digitalization, which I can understand, but I thought the more you focus on food service from an organic point of view, the more you need to invest. And I'm thinking here of the example of the Czech Republic when you had to build the distribution centers. That's what I'm wondering, if the shift may change going forwards, because you may have to build more distribution centers the bigger you get in food service. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Fabienne. On your request on the like-for-like on target groups, let us come back to you. I think it's a good idea. So we'll reflect on that and pick up on your proposal. On the change in delivery reporting, essentially it's only two things that we have changed. We exclude two things that have a delivery character, and the most prominent out of this is transport after checkout. This was a service that we have offered in selected places, like, for example, in France, where customers would buy in the store and then we do the delivery for them, i.e. we load their trolley and then bring it. And that we feel like this is different to conventional delivery business, and therefore to make the numbers more comparable to FSD companies, we have excluded that from our reporting. Actually, it's less than 1%.
Okay.
On the CapEx, it's good that you asked the question, and I can share with you that initially our thought was similar, that we need to build more and more depots, and that that's the way to go, and that indeed would be CapEx heavy. I think our learning in the meantime has progressed significantly, that having the store network and the store base actually is not a problem, it's a blessing. If we combine the store space in a sensible manner, our out-of-store delivery model is very competitive, both on service level and also in regard to financial economics. And we would only consider opening new depots when we hit the ceiling of a store. So when we understand that now we are coming to the limits of ensuring proper service level and at the acceptable cost in a given location, only then we would open a new location.
What's the limit then? Is it like 10% of sales for the store where you say it starts to get difficult?
No, I would not make it depending on the number of revenues or the percentage of revenues. It's at the end of the day, it's on how far can I move the wall. The productivity that I have with my two target groups, HoReCa and Trader, can I satisfy that to a good level, not only acceptable level, to a very good level in the store space? Because let's not forget, the store is the core, and it needs to be protected and acknowledged. But yes, the more we move out of complementary categories and we can unlock more square meters for picking and then handling, the more I can also satisfy delivery. I think we mentioned that in one of our calls in the recent years. A very good example for that is Budapest, where in the meantime it moved from 10% space allocation and in the meantime it's close to 50% of space allocation. It's a depot in a store.
On your question with respect to real estate, I think it's fair to say that it's roughly half-half, as you would distribute those topics into pure development transactions and sale and lease back transactions. From a yield perspective, while we do not disclose this, to us it's very important on any sale and lease back transaction that we basically have three prerequisites fulfilled. One is that in the country, or even more specifically, the city that we do those transactions in, the yield compression is already very advanced. I think the second one is very strongly that the lease terms do reflect our operational needs in order not to limit that flexibility to our businesses. And in the same vein, obviously, the performance of those cash and carry stores that are being put under sale and lease back has to be strong and have to have a strong not only track record but also future outlook in order for us to be able to capture strongly on sale and lease back, where I think with the team and expertise that we have in place, we have been able to generate some very good also financial returns in the sustainable future.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from a line of Maxi Mallet of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thank you and good morning. I have three questions on my side. The first one is, with regard to the mix of clients that you've mentioned, overall it has improved toward well Horeca and traders, but if I'm looking at Russia in particular, I think when you announce your new buy more pay less targets in order to increase your exposure notably to traders, back then you explained that the small company owners were about 50% of your sales in Russia and traders were about 33% of your sales. And I've seen the slides that actually small company owners are now 54% of your sales and traders have come down a bit to 30%. So could you maybe give some color on, well, why this trend has moved, well, in the opposite direction of, well, the target that you had when you launched Buy More, Pay Less and what you expect for 2019-20? The second one, I just wanted to make sure that I understood what you mentioned earlier with regard to the like-for-like trend you expect in Russia. Did I understand correctly that you would expect the like-for-like to stabilize in 2019-20 in the country, or if not, what you actually expect? And the last one would be with regard to Eastern Europe. You had a significant sales growth of about 6% excluding currency, but yet the margin came under 40 basis points of pressure. I was wondering if you could, well, elaborate a bit on that. And, well, you expect similar growth in 2019-20, but no margin leverage. So what, again, is, well, what's the mechanism toward no leverage on margin despite, well, a significant sales growth? Thank you.
Yeah, fair question on Russia. And there are a couple of components that play a role here. One is that it's fair to say that while we focused significantly on trader at the beginning of the transformation in 18, we lost a bit of momentum on Horeca. That is something that has been corrected as of summer, and we see promising indication that this is now materializing in a positive way. The other one is, as we have been selling more or less on a mass transaction basis with traders, we also had to give up on certain customers that in total were not profitable. This also in light of some of the HVS stuff I was referencing before. So it's fair to say, yes, there was a decline. It doesn't change our mind. The most significant change in dynamics is on Horeca. It's necessary on Horeca, and we can see that this is starting to materialize in the recent weeks. If you then look into the future, our ambition is to furthermore improve the trend on sales in Russia. We have been able to improve the trend from 17-18 to 18-19. We must improve the trend in 19-20, and then finally to break even eventually. As I mentioned earlier, this is not detached from the market environment, and we need to, on this one as well, stay prudent. The market environment in Russia remains quite challenging.
On the margin in Eastern Europe for the last year, while most of the countries did actually contribute to additional profits on the EBITDA side, the Czech Republic, as we have mentioned before, with the startup of the new very significant distribution center, did have some setback on that end. Especially operationally, this is now very much contained and properly up and running. So we do not expect this to happen at all in the next year. Your question with respect to why is not there a significant margin uplift according to our indications, that is to a certain extent driven also by the real estate sale and leaseback transactions on the side of Eastern Europe. So we do see an underlying operational improvement in most of the countries there, which is slightly dented then by the additional rents.
Thanks for that. That's very clear. And maybe one last for me, if I may, which is with regard to your guidance for the full year, just to make sure I get the math right. For the EBITDA, you expect a stable EBITDA, excluding real estate, excluding transformation costs, 70 million euros of impact from the transformation costs at midpoint, and 10 million of contribution from real estate. So basically, well, that would mean your EBITDA should come up. Well, the target would be to be around 961 million euros of EBITDA for 2019-20. Am I forgetting anything, or the math is actually going there?
I think that is the composition of the main effects that we have also quoted.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question comes from a line of Vincent Lee of Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Morning, last question. I have two questions, please. I think this time last year you talked about the sustainable level of real estate profits being in the range of 150 to 170 million. And today you're talking about 100 million being the sustainable level. So can you maybe help me understand the lowered expectations on the sustainable real estate profits? And then secondly, on the EBITDA guidance, can you just confirm that for being in line with the previous year is on a constant accounting basis, specifically in relation to IFRS 16? Thanks.
Yes, well, I think on the real estate side, it's very important to basically put together the various years, given that real estate also is a long cycle to develop many of the development projects. So if you then start with taking the last year with 388, if you then look into very strongly what we actually do capitalize in the China transaction, from a also real estate perspective, given of an EV that is at 1.9 billion, there is a very, very significant component of real estate in there. And then you basically look at the 100 million that we do see in the long run. Then I think there is a very clear picture on how the sustainable development is, which did strongly include the Chinese piece on that side of things. So from that perspective, the 100 is the one that is also related to the China disposal, but also to the very strong development that we have seen in the last year. And with respect to the guidance, that is a correct statement. Next question, please.
The next question comes from a line of Xavier Limeni of Bank of America Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. The first one, actually, you bought, you know, some food service company already, you know, a few years ago now. So what are the learnings you get, you know, from that? And if I was to link that to your M&A potential that you were flagging, actually, so what are you going to do there? So what are your expectations in terms of food service? So that would be the first question. Second one, can we talk a bit about Germany? So you mentioned, for instance, that it took 20 years in France to move the ACO's customers and actually focus more on the HoReCa customers. So what about Germany? Because that's been, you know, a long time that you try to really fix the business. We have not seen much progress so far. So what are your expectations in Germany going forward?
Yeah, well, the learning I think we have gained through the FSD transactions is manifold. First of all, we are absolutely cognizant of the fact that for food service distribution in certain areas, you need to have category capabilities that are not necessarily compatible with the conventional out-of-store delivery business, which we are conducting. To name a domain, frozen is one. And having conducted now those transactions, I think it's clear that one angle to look at it is the category angle. The second angle to look at it is the regional angle. So in markets where we would look into targets, we would look for targets that have a regional presence that might be complementary with the one that we have. And last but not least, it's the target audience domain. And if you take ProAPro as an example, ProAPro is quite a different business proposition than the conventional metro business proposition, because not like at metro or macro, where we are serving the SMEs, the independent owners, here it's the institutional food service business, which is also a quite attractive sector and a growing sector that we want to now include into our strategic transformation. So as you can see, there is different angles how to look at it. The good learning we have out of the transactions is that, yes, there is synergy. Of course, there is synergy back of the house. There's synergy in sourcing. There is significant synergy in cross-fertilizing the Rolodex, the customer database. But there's also a very important rule of thumb, which for us is a strong belief, and that means to protect the integrity of the brand and the culture while strengthening both with the underlying brand and the culture of Metro, if that's the way to go. So if you look into the three transactions that we have conducted, you still see all of those three brands being in the market, and we strongly believe that that is the precondition for success, and by the way, is the precondition to retain people, and the success factor also in food service distribution, number one, is people. Now, in Germany, and your question is answered simply, I don't think it's going to take 20 years until we will have a significant reduction in percentage of sales on SEO. Still, the volume might be considerable. So how does that go hand in hand? Well, it goes hand in hand with our ambition to outperform growth on HoReCa in the coming years, and therefore, as a logical function out of that, reduce the dependency from SEOs. How would you do it? We have a very straightforward way of thinking on this, and that has to do with assessing the productivity of ranges. So it doesn't make sense, we agree. It doesn't make sense for Metro to operate a large apparel department in our stores. But yes, there are never out of stock articles that our customers signal to us that they definitely want. So they like to buy sneakers at Metro as much as they like to buy white shirts and jeans. Why is that? That's clothes they wear for working. So it's work wear, so to say. Same on electronics. Do we need to carry the same range like a consumer electronics specialist? No. But we can see through the rotation of products that certain categories are important, make a difference, and need to be supplied. And that's the way of thinking. We have no romance with any of those categories. We are not taking any sentimental approach here. The only thing that will drive the optimization of categories and ranges is the data set. And if our customers say they still want to buy those products, we'll do that. But you will see in Germany within the next few years already that the space allocation will change quite radically. And next time you're here on campus in Düsseldorf, we are more than happy to show you that to you and to share with you how that will change in the near future.
The next question comes from the line of Jürgen Elfers of Commerzbank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I would like to ask for a bit more of insight into how Metro Markets actually started, what sort of development costs and rollout costs will be expected in the years to come. You compete, obviously, internally with Metro France, who has also established a platform model. Can you share with us how we would have to see those two platform models going forward within the same group? Then the second question is on the Net Promoter Score. You provided in your slides an increase of 1% in HoReCa and 9%, if I'm not mistaken, at Traders. Please tell us more about the development in absolute terms on Net Promoter Scores. Then on food service acquisitions, I got the feeling that you are now focusing also on the institutional food service segment on the basis of the learnings from ProAPro. Can you please share with us your view on how this would depress margins, given that the customers of the institutional segment are typically larger customers? Many thanks for taking the, my questions.
Yeah. Let me start with Metro Markets. The platform that we are basically taking as a reference is not the platform from France. It's true. We developed a captive solution in France already since 2017, and it's predominantly focused on France. So that is clear. Metro Markets is a copy of what we have done at Real. You know that after the acquisition of Hitmeister, we combined the two and we moved from 50 million GMV, meanwhile, to 500 million, teaming up with more than 6,000 independent vendors. And that's the principle we want to apply for Metro Markets. It has been developed essentially within 9 months from December to August, December 18 to August 19. It's now in the ramp-up mode. We want to make it scale first in Germany, and then this will be the platform that will be deployed into as many markets of our current portfolio and maybe even more. So this is the one that we will expand. The platform in France is for France and has to do just with the sequencing on how those two initiatives have been created. Eventually, it might be also serving France. Would not exclude that for the time being. On the food source distribution question, I can reassure you that the business with larger customers doesn't need to have lower margins. And the thing here is all about making sure that we are leveraging the scale with a cost ratio that is compatible. It's a similar discussion like the one we had earlier. Can we make the trader business profitable? Similar here. But the potential in itself is good, and it's one that we have not been addressing for so long, and the Pro acquisition opened our eyes for that one. So on the NPS, we dare to share a bit of more insights. The honest truth is as well, the full rollout only completed a bit less than a year ago. So we will release more numbers, Jürgen, in the coming reporting events, but for now we would keep it on this level.
Let me just ask, Olaf, are you lagging behind other competitors with respect to NPS?
It's actually not a public domain data set that we can use as benchmark. Many of our competitors, and I would say the majority of our competitors, don't have a corresponding NPS tool set. And those who have are not publishing, as far as we have observed.
Okay. Well, I was just asking because there is opinions in the market that a good or improving NPS is not a key for success. You ought to have the best NPS in the given sector. And therefore, I was asking whether you could also provide some peer group comparison to figure out where you stand.
Yeah. As I said, the public domain yeah. data set on that one is limited, but I would 100% agree on your observation. Just an improving NPS is not yet a clear indicator for success or failure. That always goes hand in hand with, do we provide the most relevant assortment? Do we keep the promise on quality? Do we improve the service level? But it's, on the other hand, very clear if your NPS is not improving, something's going wrong. I mean, and for us, NPS... more than a score, it's a guiding principle. Through the Net Promoter Score surveys, we get a lot of very specific requests from customers on how to improve the way of operations in stores and delivery. And that, I think, is as important as the number itself.
Then, if you don't mind, let me just ask an additional question. I know Metro has been in transformation quite substantially in the last 12 months. Would you be happy with the improvement that you have seen in the NPS?
I'm satisfied, but never happy. So I would even say I'm just very much encouraged. I think what we see is things move to the right direction. This also corresponds with the momentum in sales. And if I say satisfied, I'm satisfied for the moment, and then I have the healthy dissatisfaction that it can be better and must be better.
Thank you very much indeed.
And there are no more questions at this time. I hand back to Olaf Koch, CEO, for closing comments.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining this early morning call on financial results 18-19. Thank you for your attention. Our investor relations team remains at your disposal whenever you have a further question. Other than that, I wish you a great day and a happy holiday season ahead. Take care. Thank you.